Doctor, look.
Stand aside, nurse. I'm Dr. Homebrew.
Stand clear. Oh.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dr. Homebrew. Brian and myself are back, and we are ready to judge some homebrew. Welcome, BJCP Grandmaster Judges. Welcome back to Dr. Homebrew.
Well, thank you.
I feel very welcome.
Yeah, well, good. You should. You're supposed to, anyway.
It's quite an honor.
We have two homebrews today. One is a Braggot, which I think I can count on one hand how many times I've had a Braggot.
Huh. One finger?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. And then what's the other one? Barley wine, I think, right?
Yeah, an American barley wine.
Yeah. So that'll be a good show. You know, a lot of high alcohol stuff. I think that'll be sounds like a lot of fun. It's a good time, man. Very good time. To start this show out for myself, I am personally drinking a non-alcoholic craft beer. I am drinking a non-alcoholic craft beer. Yes. Cool. Yeah, I've never... that's not true. I've had, because I want to try them. I'm interested in that concept of non-alcoholic beer in general, right? But non-alcoholic beer that tastes good, that doesn't just taste like, well, like, you know, seltzer or whatever. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And this is, it's not bad. It's the Athletic, I think, is what the Athletic Brewing Company.
I've heard of them, yeah.
Yeah, they're all over. Somehow they end up getting a ton of press, like, all the time. Like, every year there's a Business Insider article. It's like, we know.
A good name.
I know. It's reduced gluten and whatever, but it's like, this is a golden ale, and it's hoppy. It's like, there's a bitterness to it. In my opinion, it's a little too bitter, but it doesn't, it tastes like beer.
Hate hoppy beer.
No, stop, right? No. It's for a golden ale. Yes, it's too bitter.
Okay, good point.
Yeah, for a pale ale, no.
Yeah, to style.
Right.
Well, just call it a pale ale and enjoy it.
I know,
just
right?
Take a piece of electrician's electrical tape and just tape over that golden part.
It says golden right there. What are you going to do? Love it. I can't do it.
I would imagine, you know, of course, taking away the alcohol is going to change the overall flavor balance of the beer. So,
yeah. It does. And like I said, I've had a couple and it's very weird. I think I even talked about them on the show where, like, I had a porter and it just tasted like wort. It was just weird and...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Grainy but sweet, and there's really wasn't a whole lot to it. But this, there's actually like a process that your palate sort of goes through, you know, and breaking down this beer. I don't know. Try it. Just check it out. I'm super interested in the non-alcoholic beer space. I don't know why.
All right.
I think because I like drinking beer, and I don't want to just get drunk all the time. That's my main thing. And if these craft brewers aren't going to be brewing pale ales that are 5%, you know, sorry, I'm going to go somewhere else. But anyway,
I digress. Want a 7% pale ale and a 8% IPA? Yeah.
Nothing makes me more angry than a 6% pale ale. It's just
nothing
just,
makes you more fucking, angry than that, JP.
No, it doesn't. It makes me upset. It makes me
what
entirely
about a hazy
upset.
Pale ale that's 6%?
Yeah. Okay, so our first beer is a Braggot brewed by Mark. Mark, welcome to the show, my friend.
How's it going? Glad to be back.
Not too bad.
I wonder if Mark used any five-star products when he brewed this.
What's that?
I wonder if he used any five-star products when he brewed this for cleaning and sanitizing the equipment.
I don't know. Did I? JP.
Brian. This is Brian's thing. This is Brian's going to take this and run with it. Go ahead, Brian.
Well, we would like to thank our sponsor, Five Star. They've been with us throughout the years, and they're good people.
Could have waited.
Whenever in-person events are allowed again, we'll go greet them at the homebrew cons and craft beer fests of the world. But
there you go.
Until then, we just have to thank them over the interwebs here. And
that's true.
They've been our sponsor from the very beginning, so we love them. And I always use PBW and Star San. And they've got a lot of other great products too.
That's correct.
Five Star.
There you
go. Five Star Chemicals.
There you go. All right, Mark.
For 4 stars. You don't need 6 stars. Just go with 5 star.
That's right. All right, Mark, back to you, man. How's it going?
Oh, I'm fantastic, man.
Tell me what the hell a braggot is and why I need to drink yours. Besides,
well,
like,
braggot, you can think of it like a mead beer. So it's a combination between a beer and a mead. So a mead is a honey wine. Obviously, you guys know what beer is, or I hope so.
Barely. I don't, I'm drinking non-alcoholic beer. What do I know? I'm stone cold sober, baby. Let's go. Have you ever done something like this before?
Yeah, I think so. I think okay. I might have had one on a podcast of yours before.
Oh, really? Oh, well, shit.
I vaguely recollect that.
What do I know, man?
That like was somewhat recently, as I recall.
All right. Is this a rebrew then? Or like, do I not have all the information?
No, this is something brand new. So
okay, something brand new.
This is a stout braggot. Yeah.
And, okay.
I won't spoil too much, but I'm really interested in what you guys think about this one.
Yeah, don't spoil too much. I'm going to open it right now. Wow. Ooh, are we getting a little geyser? No, we're not.
Nice hiss.
Okay. No, we're not. Perfect. All right. All right. Well, Brian Cooper, go ahead, man. Why don't you start us off? Whoa.
All right.
That's a lot of fun. I feel like this one's a little too...
I'm going to need about 5 minutes here just to get past the head here. Degas, yeah. Well, I can start with the aroma, so that'll be just fine, and the appearance. So what we have is a braggot with a stout base, and made with wildflower honey, I believe you said. And it was, it should be sparkling and what did you say? Medium sweet. So, yeah.
Yeah, medium sweet. Yeah.
I don't know the strength on it, though. Is it sac or standard?
Standard. It's standard
strength. Okay. That always helps. And when you're giving a braggot or any mead to a competition, you always want to declare those things. Because if you make judges guess, they just get pissy, I guess, you know, sometimes. But it's obvious that it's sparkling because it's, you know, boom, there's the head kicking right up. I have a story about this bottle. The first bottle I opened of this beer was, I was unpacking your very, very nice, bubble wrap job. And, I was using scissors to do that, of course. And the scissors just somehow like lifted up the cap on accident and just flipped it up, then just flipped it up off of the bottle. And it just, whoosh, and it just like, so, you know, post accident, I capped on CO2 on the carbonation that came up in the neck, as this one kind of did too. It didn't gush, but it came up in the neck a little bit. So I capped it on that because it wasn't,
but you had it warm.
It wasn't, it wasn't, it was warm when I was putting it away. So I waited until a day later. So I hoped that no oxidation would come in. And I'm going to see if there's any differences here between my notes and when this came in. But
bummer.
So, yeah. But I had to judge it quick. I felt really bad. I was like, well, I'm not going to waste this braggot. I'm going to taste it. So it came up a day later. And I wondered if the carbonation might have been a little lower than it would have been otherwise. But I did cap it. I sealed the cap back on there. So anyway, nice. That was the funny story there. I'm primarily getting the, in the nose, primary aroma of raisin fruitiness with some underlying fig. Alcohol is quite evident, but it's clean and sweet. Fruity esters are high. It has a moderate complexity, I would say. Medium-low honey aroma. No obvious varietal noted. It seems like a wildflower type expression. It's kind of a light floral. I noted that even though I didn't know at the time that it was wildflower. You told me that later. So this is like straight out of my notes here. No obvious roast in there. There's a faint kind of chocolate note. And I was wondering if I was getting a little banana or something in there too, but I'm not getting that now. There's something interesting fruity in there that's kind of hard to define. I guess just the raisiny combining with the alcohol, I think, and making kind of a like a fermented fruit kind of aroma, you know. Appearance wise, it's a nice, rich, reddish brown color, kind of a, you know, not a deep, deep brown, but kind of a medium light brown. And initially it forms a pretty good sized head. The first one I did would kind of formed a medium sized head, mostly large bubbles, and they receded pretty quickly the first time. This one's actually persisting fairly well, so I might, you know, come up a point on that. I'm not sure. I didn't see any real legs. Slight haze only. The bubbles rise continuously in patches after it kind of after the head kind of cleared on the first sample I did. So I gave it a 4 out of 6 for appearance, but I would probably come up to a 5 because there's just the minor haze is the only real problem here. I guess it's a little more reddish than I might expect for a stout, but you know, I guess you're adding honey, you know, honey wine into the mix here too, so that might change the color a bit depending how you did all that. If you blended honey wine with stout and it was a lighter honey wine, flavor wise raisin and plum are prominent again with kind of a fig undertone, very very fruit forward. The tannins are fairly low and out of the way, and it has a slight floral expression again. There are some faint hints of like dark carameliness, I would say. And a whiff of sweet chocolate, not any real roasty, rich qualities. But when you do braggots, you know, it does change the expression of the beer. So it's gonna play differently. I guess I would expect a little more roast to somehow come through being declared as a stout based style. It's still very smooth, balanced to the fruit quality, faintly honey-like. And I think the fruit quality is coming from the malt and the honey, probably. It's not like, it doesn't seem like a real ester bomb. It's just in the ingredients. Medium full body, medium low. Well, the first sample had medium low carbon dioxide. It had faded in the day I had it left in the fridge. So this is a little more towards medium here. Nice little fig lingers in the aftertaste, low, and there's no low to no roast in here. You know, very little dark malt to speak of. Again, I'm getting a little floral in the aftertaste as well. Overall impression, I guess it's a pleasant drinking stout braggot, just less honey and much bigger fruit, you know, slightly overripe. Reminiscent of, you know, older bananas, kind of, kind of like, you know, or raisins that have been, you know, sliced open and sitting around for a while or something to, you know, kind of funkify, but it's not funky or gnarly in any way, really. It's just smooth and clean. I think I would like more stout character with a little extra roast. You could bring that up higher. And if the honey's pulling it away, you might need to over adjust a little bit. And you know, you could also add a bit more honey to increase the kind of braggadiness of it too. It's like the honey is kind of fighting with some of the other, mainly the fruit. And, you know, it's an interesting animal. I found the balance to be quite fun and interesting, and it's just well done. I think it probably just needs a little more fine tuning to get it to express as stout and maybe get a little more definite honey character to come out of it. But I thought it was very good. I gave it a 36 out of 50, and this was a fun one to taste. Like really fruity and fun, and you know, nice aroma, no off stuff really at all. Just kind of I honestly haven't had a lot of braggots in my time either, because they're just not something you see around a lot. So it's kind of fun to taste them and, you know, see the combination of beer with honey and what it does. So I'll let Brian comment on this too, and we'll see where we land here.
There you go, Shark. Give it a whirl. Give it a spin, Aruni.
All right. Everybody step up, spin the wheel, see where she lands. Mark, thanks for sending this in. I know you've mentioned this before, we've discussed it, but for folks that may not have heard previous shows you've been on, are you in a homebrew club?
Absolutely not.
You are too prickly from that tone of voice. It sounds like you're just you don't get along with people. You don't want to be around them. You don't want to brew with them or learn from them. So that's probably for the best that you're just brewing on your own. That's okay. So no, this is like JP was saying. I think the only braggart I have had in my life before was the one you sent us before this. So you keep sending us braggart, and I appreciate that because it gives me a chance to try some new things that I haven't had in the past. It was for the aroma. I got that medium wildflower honey. I got some low to medium toasted bread. No hop aroma. Low esters. I definitely got raisin like Cooper did. I got a little bit of, I got some peach too, which was kind of interesting. And it kind of comes and goes, and I might have talked myself into it, but I got some peach in the aroma. So kind of a low level, so low esters, no off aromas, 9 out of 12 for that. Appearance, just like JP held up his glass to the camera, giant light brown head, persistent with big bubbles. The beer's dark brown in color and clear, 3 out of 3. You know, it's interesting for a beer with a stout as a base. I kind of expected when I poured it for it to be like black like Guinness, but when I thought about that, I was a little surprised for a moment that I thought, well, it's a braggart. It's a braggart based on a stout. It's not a Guinness. So it's going to have some lighter color because of the honey and other component of this beverage. Flavor. Initially, the flavor, I got some dark malt at kind of a low level, not roast, but I got some kind of dark malt character, followed by medium to medium high honey. What's interesting is if you've ever had Tart of Darkness from the brewery, which is a sour beer, and it's not, I don't think that it makes, I don't think it's a great sour, but the malt character of Tart of Darkness is, I think, very similar to the malt character of this beer. Brian, looks like you're about to say something, but you're muted.
I think it's a great, Tart of Darkness is a great sour. I actually just tried to brew a clone of it.
It's just a matter of personal taste. I mean, Tart of Darkness is considered like the classic sour stout. Maybe I got a hold of a bad bottle once. And what I found objectionable was not the stout part. And I bring it up not to like slag this beer and say, oh, it tastes like this beer I don't like, but just to say that the malt character of that stout in Tart of Darkness has a similar character to this. And I couldn't begin to tell you why, right? So sour beer is not a braggart. There's nothing sour about this. And maybe it's just the use of the stout as a base is the similarity. I don't know. Bitterness was at a medium level, balances out in mid palate. Thought it was well attenuated. Finish is long and balanced toward honey, so that's 14 out of 20. For mouthfeel, body's medium, carbonation's medium to high. I'd probably characterize this as somewhat creamy. Slight warming, but as often happens for the first beer that I judge for the show before I have anything to eat, maybe anything, I could have like a golden ale, non-alcoholic, and it might give me some slight warming.
You definitely can.
Yeah, so that's a possibility.
I know where you can get
no astringency. 5 out of 5. Overall impression 7 for a total of 38. I like this beer a lot, but I got to thinking, I wonder if the stout is the best base for this. As Brian and I both noted, there's kind of a raisiny character to the aroma. There's a little bit of a raisiny character to the flavor. And I wonder if something like a barley wine or a double, or a double, as some folks like to say, probably should say double, the Belgian double, that already has like a raisiny character might maybe fit a little better than a stout. Just a thought. I mean, it's not that it's a comment that might be a little bit too overarching to say, no, you made this thing, but don't make that thing. Make this whole other thing instead.
Or you must call it something else than what you called it. You know, if it was a stout base, you'd call it a stout. But I agree too with like more like double like kind of character. That raisininess really comes out strongly. And I don't know if it's just that the stout recipe had a lot of middle malts and, you know, rich caramels or special bees or something to kind of push up those raisining flavors, or if it just came from the combination of the honey wine with the beer style. So it's interesting.
Yeah, but I did like it. And, you know, 38 is an excellent. So, you know, I think it's well done, and I'm looking forward to hearing about it.
Perfect. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't know. This beer is so weird. This Braggot is so weird. It's hard to agree. I agree and disagree with a lot of what you guys said. I think stout is a fine base for it. But it does kind of create this weird, like, plummy pluot, you know, sort of monstrosity in my mouth that I don't know. Like, on the one hand, Cooper, you're like, oh, I would like to have more astringency, more stout-like. But I don't know. It's very confusing.
That might hurt it, yeah, if it was too much.
It might hurt it a little bit, yeah, because it does drink. But you're also right at the same time, because it does sort of drink more like an old ale Braggot. You know
old
what I mean?
Old ale is really a good. I haven't had an old ale for so many years. And you said that, and that immediately triggered that thought in my mind.
It's a little tart.
It's a good call.
Yeah, it's a little, you know, raisiny. It's a lot raisiny, but
yeah. Also, it's not that extremely dark either, like a stout.
Yeah,
it's kind of reddish.
So reddish brown. I don't know. I mean, it doesn't drink like a stout based Braggot. I guess that's just where I'm going to finish on that. Mark, why don't you give us the recipe for this, please?
Absolutely. And before I jump in, yeah, I wanted to hear more about JP's thoughts on this. But the reason I went stout with it, I didn't actually do a stout base beer for this Braggot. But when this Braggot was younger, it came off more like coffee-like. And I know you're a coffee guy. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I really wanted to hear your opinions about this. But it came off a little sour. Mm-hmm. A little coffee like. Did you get any of that with that?
I get the tart. I mean, I think that there might be something going on. I mean, look at that. That's a whole glass of foam that I just poured out of the bottle that's been open since the segment started 20 minutes ago. So I think that there is, you have a bug in here that's sort of, you know, making things a little bit tarty. Yeah, a little bit. I don't get coffee in it. No. I mean, If I had to force myself to get coffee out of it, maybe more like a latte or something like that. You know what I mean? Where it's like a little bit of sweetness and then maybe some of that roasty character, but maybe it's from the base beer and not. I'm going to go with no. I don't get coffee out of here.
It could be like, you know, Brian did have that comment that it does express kind of like a sour. And as I taste it too, I do get a little tartness in there. And JP, yep, you might be right about something going on in there, and that's pulling away from what was once a more chocolatey beer and richer, and is now receding into middle fruit and even the peach and pear, you know, plum that Brian was mentioning.
Yeah. So how did you do this, Mark? What was your process here?
Yeah, so I just want to say, first off, the sourness was kind of intended. I don't know if that part's a bug. I can definitely see where you're saying about the foam. Yeah, maybe there's something got in there. But as far as the recipe, what I did is I started with 2.5 pounds of wildflower honey and 1 pound of golden light DME, and I bocheted that. And so what that means is I put it in a crock pot for about 8 hours, mixed it all together, came back the next morning, and it was caramelized. I added that to water to total about 4 gallons RO water. And then I boiled for 15 minutes with 1/2 ounce of Mandarina Bavaria hops. I chilled and then pitched US 05.
What was your starting and finishing gravity on it?
I don't.
That's really that yeah, right really interesting. By the way,
I want to say it was 1050.
So, where's the stout base?
Yeah, that's what I was saying before. There's not exactly a stout base. I just declared that because mm-hmm. that's what I thought it tasted like.
Got it. Okay.
So you lied to us. You lied yeah. to the doctor's homebrew. We cannot give you a proper diagnosis if you're not being totally honest with your doctors.
Yeah. Oh, man. Wow.
Please, sir.
So
yeah,
you
tell
took
us the truth.
You took honey and DME and basically reduced it, caramelized it, and then added water back and then boiled it with some hops, and then that's it.
That's it.
I mean, for doing that, it tastes like an old ale based Braggot.
Yeah, I would go old ale.
Yeah, I wouldn't go stout, but again, you said it's changed, I think. So, yeah, double would be fine too. I mean, that's a cool way to do it. Is that something you came up with, or did the internet poison your mind to do something like this?
Yeah, I mean, I came up with it on my own. I don't know if I'm the first person to do this, but
let's say yes.
let's sure, just say I'm the yes. first person to do this.
There but, you go. Cheers, man.
But yeah, I came up with this idea, and I, you know, people have been doing Bochets for a long time, you know, caramelizing mm-hmm. honey. And I was like, that's kind of boring. Let me add some DME in there and see if I can change it up a little bit.
Yeah.
In what context are people making Bochets? In the mead world?
Yeah, in the mead world, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I've seen that mentioned, and it always just seems very daunting. Like, wow, you're going to basically scald honey, and then, I don't know, it doesn't make any sense to me. But
now, crock pot, you put it on low, man. That thing, you're gonna cook that thing all day. It'll never burn because sure. it's just on. You can cook anything. I mean, put that Christmas ham in there for like 9 hours.
I don't know. Fine, don't say man. Never, man. Yeah, it's it's very unique. It's very interesting. How much of this did you make?
4 gallons.
4 gallons.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, that's super interesting, man. Are you gonna adapt it? Are you gonna change it? What are you gonna do with this?
Yeah, so actually, I have one in the fermenter right now that I did the same Bochet method, mm-hmm. same hop schedule, but I put maple syrup in the crock pot. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
In addition, instead of the DME, or in addition to?
I did the DME as well. It's okay. The honey DME and the maple syrup.
Maple syrup. All right. Mm-hmm. Huh. You know, because I wonder if, I mean, because if you're boiling it, you could probably steep some grains in there too, if you wanted to sort of like add more, you know, more of a stout thing. Like if you liked the way that you thought that was coming together, you could easily do that. You can easily just, I mean, you're basically making a base extract beer that you can add anything to because you're boiling hops with it.
Yeah.
So you could really sort of do whatever you want. That's an interesting way to make a Braggot. Hmm.
Yeah,
I like
try
it.
To, you know, follow like the brewlosophy kind of short and shoddy kind of methods.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Simple homebrewing.
Wow. That's sort of stumped me there. Do we have any questions as the doctor's homebrew for Mark? Let's flip this around a little bit. Do you guys want to ask him, Mark, anything about this?
Why did you lie to us?
That's really what it's about, man.
No, what is your intention with this? What was the inspiration besides just wanting to do a Bochet?
I just wanted to. I'm thinking about going pro here soon, and so I'm just trying to do like the most crazy things I can think of and get feedback on them. And so that's kind of I love the ideas old ale and Double and all those other things like. I didn't think about that, to be honest, but I think those probably would have been better base styles. But yeah, I mean, I was just, I'm just trying to get as much feedback as I can.
Yeah. Well, if you
want
to do
about
a Belgian
pro brewer or mead maker or both.
Well, unfortunately in the US, if you want to do Braggots, it's considered a brewery license. If you want to do traditional meads or malmels, it's a winery. So at some point, I have to pick one or the other. I'm not really sure which way I'm going to go, though.
Yeah, well, you could get a warehouse space with two addresses, and then you get your winery license in one, and then the brewery license on the second one.
There you go.
You could do that.
Yeah. If you want to do a Belgian style, though, I'd suggest using a Belgian yeast with it, and you'll get more of those phenolics and things that you get in the Belgian style. It's like it has the raisininess of a double, but not really the yeast character of a double. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
the old ale is probably a better descriptor. But okay. Yeah, stout. It didn't scream stout. But if you'd said, old ale, I'd probably add a few points.
Okay. All right. Are you, is HomebrewCon live this year?
We
I think
hope.
It's live in person. I'm not sure if it was in person or not. Were you planning on going to HomebrewCon, Mark?
No plans at this time.
Okay. Because this would be something, and it's probably too late to get in a proposal to speak or something, but presuming that in 22, maybe, we'll all be healthier or people or dead or whatever. Maybe you might want to propose getting a proposal for doing a session in 22.
And they already have all their speakers lined up, Brian?
For 22, not for 21. Because 21 is later on this summer, right? That's like,
if we're coming up to the close of summer, sweetheart. I think it's over.
That's true.
HomebrewCon is done.
Yeah.
It was? Okay. Well, this is just how out of it I am this year. I'm just so okay. Well, maybe the next HomebrewCon, this is something that's interesting and different enough that you might want to consider going and putting in even a proposal to speak. And, you know, crockpot, maybe 20, 30 in a row of these and keg them or something. So you could have enough to serve in a small session. Just, well, hey, it's slow cooking, man. Just put some in every day and just keep pouring it in your fermenter.
I mean, that's not a bad idea, especially even if you just want to make some of the Beauchet to hand out to taste.
Right.
Not even just of the mead.
Even informally, if you don't want to do a session. Yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy.
I'm picturing Mark's future brewery and our winery, whatever it will be. And in the back, there's just this giant, 30 times size crock pot. Put it on low.
Yeah. Honey, I Beauchet
more
the
like
kids.
Racks and racks and racks of crock pots, like 50 or 100 or 500 there crock pots just going at once.
Yeah, it's like it's like a Bitcoin mining farm in China, but it's just crock pots.
That was my second venture. How'd you guys do that?
Actually, you could use a stainless steel pot over each processor. It probably generates enough heat to Beauchet. Like for each Bitcoin processing GPU, you can mine Bitcoin.
I'm a DeFi guy, man. I don't do Bitcoin anymore.
it's all about Dogecoin these days, anyway.
Yeah. But in all seriousness, Sergio from Melvino, he came up with a process a few years ago where he had like a food grade like metal bin, like a 30 gallon bin, and I think, if I remember correctly, he put a sous vide, like one of those things sous vide with, into that, and that's how we Beauchet'd. And I haven't tried that yet, but that was going to be the way I did it if I ever got bigger.
Smart. Not too bad.
That sounds good.
Yeah. All right, Mark. Well, if that's it, I think you've blown everyone away a little bit too much today. And these guys have a whole other segment to do.
Wow. But I do have one more question, just in terms of like the BJCP stuff. If we're going to say old ale is the best style to declare it as, what things could I do to improve it?
Ah, God, well, I don't know.
use English hops with it, and research old ale recipes and try to emulate that as best you can, but it's obviously not coming
because
your recipe necessarily.
Yeah. It's literally DME. Like there's nothing to replicate. Yeah.
But like you said, he could steep other grains in there and get some, some other caramel malts or something in there with a little base malt and do a steep or something.
Yeah. Some specialty special B or special maybe. B. Yeah. I don't know. Try that. But I am interested to hear more about your other ventures moving forward with this, because I do think that there is a little contaminant. And so I think that's spinning things out into the old ale category that might not be there otherwise.
Yeah.
Okay. It's probably going to be hard to make this predictably the same way every time.
Yeah. Yeah. But
anything?
It's tasting cool. Char?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really... I agree with Cooper that maybe some English hops might be a good choice, but God, I'm just so unfamiliar with Braggot. I mean, I like the honey character a lot, and yeah, maybe just the English hops might be a little more suited to the style. It might be a little more herbal, woody. And you know, as you try different levels, man. Try because you make one crock pot at a time. You know, make some that's highly hopped, some that's not very highly hopped, some with you know more flavor, more aroma, some with less. Just experiment on those little batches and see what happens.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool, and I'll see if I can get a baby Palicol to grow this time.
Someone in the chat says HomebrewCon is June 22 in Pittsburgh.
Oh, wow.
Good luck getting me on a plane.
I haven't been to Pittsburgh in like 25 years.
Yeah, you're not missing much.
All right. Pittsburgh's cool when I was there. I always liked it.
Yeah, sure. All right, Mark, we'll let you go then, man.
Fantastic. Thank you, guys. All right.
Thanks, dude.
Take care.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And we're going to take a quick break here on Dr. Homebrew. Hang on. We have a whole other beer to judge. We'll be right back after this.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hello, fellow BNers. This is Sully from the 21st Amendment Brewery located in San Francisco, just two blocks from Giants Park. Before Nico and I opened the 21A and before I was a professional brewer, I homebrewed on my small four-burner apartment stove in a back house in Santa Monica, California, making my extract brews before graduating to the daunting idea of all-grain brewing. Homebrew books and information was hard to come by back then. The internet hadn't been invented yet, along with other things we take for granted today, like electricity and potable water. One thing I wish I had back then when I was learning was a radio show that could teach me the ins and outs of brewing and answer questions that I had about homebrewing, a resource for making great craft beer. The 21st Amendment Brewery is excited to be a proud sponsor of Dr. Homebrew, a great show that teaches you what you need to know about making incredible beer. Good stuff. Listen up, you might learn something. I certainly did. And thanks for your support. Tasty Crack Games.
Now, back to the examination.
All right, thanks a lot, everybody, for hanging around. We are back. It's Dr. Homebrew. Derek has joined us, and Derek has sent in an American barley wine. Derek, welcome to the show.
How's it going, guys?
Not too bad, man. We're just hanging out drinking some beers. You know what I mean?
And JP added blue tape to this so that we would know what it was. Although you can't read anything on the blue tape.
It yeah, says, sure you can.
I could read Derek.
I can sort of read Dark.
Yeah. Derek, thanks for sending your beer. Have you made a barley wine before?
Technically, it's my first time trying. I made a little kit before and just really upped the alcohol and pseudo barley wine. But no, this was my first attempt. I just switched over to all grain probably within the last year and still trying to dial it in. So figured to try and go with something a little bit different by adding the rye to it and, you know, seeing how that would come out. I've never really had a rye barley wine before. So
yeah, why not? Yeah. Forget it. Fuck it. Cool. All right. Well, Brian Schar, why don't you start us off, man?
All right. Well, Derek, thank you for sharing this this beer with us. I have to ask what I try to remember to ask everyone. Are you in a homebrew club?
No, as you'd say, I'm lone wolfing it. Kind of just you know, doing my own thing. And not that I don't like people or anything like that. It's just I don't have the time to commit to going to meetings or doing any of that.
Don't listen to what he's saying. He's the Unabomber of homebrewers.
I totally hear you. And I see that drop ceiling in the video, and you probably have like all kinds of sacks of DME squirreled away up there and Erlenmeyer flasks and stuff. So you're just trying your best to get on the watch list, and that's okay. You know, it's the homebrew watch list that the BA puts together. Yeah. You know, I enjoyed this beer. I judged American Strong at NHC in Philly, whatever year that was, probably like 7 or 8 years ago. And it was really fun because there's, you know, 13 regions. So 13, you know, American, English, barley wine, and like old ale. And by the time you get through about number 10, it's like, I think this one tastes like there's malt in here.
Right.
And yeah, I think now this one's not warming anymore. You want to see pictures of my kids? So that's a challenging style in competition to judge sometimes, but it's still a lot of fun. So I like this beer. I hesitated a little bit how to judge this, whether to just judge this as a straight up barley wine or a specialty. But I ended up judging it as a barley wine because, you know, rye is not a, I guess what I would call a prohibited ingredient for the style.
Mm-hmm.
And I would end up judging it essentially as a barley wine anyway, right? Because I'm going to go to whatever 2034. I've never been able to recite the numbers of the styles off the top of my head like a lot of other judges can, and I'm okay with that. But whatever that number that specialty is, I'm just going to judge it as a barley wine with rye in it anyway. So it's gonna come out the same either way. Aroma, I thought it had low caramel, medium spicy rye. Rye is very distinctive, as you know, and there I got definitely sort of a medium a spicy character for that. A low, almost like a grape ester, and I thought it was slightly vinous in that way. And also a low grape nuts character, even though grape nuts and grapes have absolutely nothing in common. I was thinking grape, but maybe I was thinking grape nuts. I don't know. I like grape nuts. I haven't had them in a long time, but I like them. And maybe the grape nuts to me was maybe more of a cereal character, but you know, like a good cereal, like a cereal malt, not like Frosted Flakes or Lucky Charms or some shit, but like a grape nuts type of actual cereal. I got sort of a low citrus hop aroma, but I might have talked myself into that. That's why it's the last thing I noted for aroma. Coming back to it, I'm not sure it's there. If by low, I mean it's really, really low if it's present. So 8 out of 12 for aroma. Appearance, 2 out of 3. Some haze is okay, but this is a pretty hazy barley wine. And it doesn't have the hop flavor or aroma to a degree that I would expect it to be this hazy from hops. Medium head, settled quickly. It's amber in color. So yeah, 2 out of 3. You know, like usual, the appearance factors are more, you're typically going to lose, if something's off on appearance, you're going to lose a point, maybe two. It's not, and this beer that didn't happen to, but you know, from a practical standpoint, when you're entering competition and judging competitions, if something is off in the appearance, sometimes that will, it'll kind of set the stage for a judge to have a bad impression. But in this case, everything else I thought was real good. And I didn't find anything about that off-putting. Flavor, initially the flavor is spicy rye. Hot bitterness, came up to a medium to high level to balance in mid palate. There's definitely some ethanol sweetness starting in mid palate. Not harsh fusel, but some ethanol sweetness. And that's a sign of really good fermentation. And it's a sign that you know what you're doing, that you're going to have a beer that's this high. It's going to be barley wine strength and alcohol where you can taste the ethanol, but it's not oh God, this is, you know, nail polish or whatever. I will be curious to hear about your fermentation temp control because I suspect you had some good fermentation temperature control. It's well attenuated. Finish is long and, you know, balanced toward bitterness, and a little bit of that ethanol sweetness. I get a low caramel flavor throughout, but really no hop flavor anywhere in here. So give that 12 out of 20. Mouthfeel, 5 out of 5. Oh, it's warming, but it's not warming from a standpoint of fusel or anything else. It's pleasantly warming in the way that you want a barley wine or a higher alcohol beer to be. It's kind of an evening sipper, and just you have that nice warming character to it. Medium-high body. Slightly mouth numbing. I mean, I and again, not in a bad way. This is that, hey, I'm going to sit and have a bottle of this and read a book by the fire before, by the air conditioner this time of year, before bed, and just enjoy this. And it's got a little bit of that mouth numbing. This is a high alcohol beer character to it. Neither creamy nor astringent, 5 out of 5. Overall impression, 7 for a total of 34. I thought it was really excellent. This is a great beer where the alcohol sneaks up on you. I really like it. I think the fermentation is really well done in this beer. I think it can be really challenging to brew something like this and have it not come out fusely from overly high temperature fermentation or worty because the yeast pooped out too early in fermentation. So it's an achievement. And it shows that you know what you're doing with brewing to get it like this. There's a lot going on in this beer for hops to compete with, but I think some more. You know, one of the hallmarks of American barley wine is sort of high hop, moderate to high hop flavor, moderate to high hop aroma, and it to me didn't have quite the aroma or the flavor of hops that would have put it like really higher up, but I think it's really well done. And I had a note, send us more in 5 years, but like Brian said, we'll just hang on to this bottle and we'll pop this open in a year or three and see what happens. So thank you.
Excellent. Cooper, let's go.
All right. Yeah. Had a decent hiss upon opening the beer. I just judged it as an American barley wine as well, a 22C. Just keeping in mind the rye contribution, but unless you're going to do one with, you know, where it's 20% rye, and I don't think this is anywhere near there, you know, you might then, if you're going to go really heavy with it like that, you might declare it differently. But if it's just a blend of the overall flavors, as this seems to be, you know, this is fine to enter as a normal American barley wine. So just to set that base there, has in the aroma, a smooth, caramelly rich malt, with a light rye, kind of husky graininess there. Medium aroma of the malt. It's pretty firm and rich. I found a medium low resiny and a low citrus hop aroma alongside that. Very smooth alcohol, medium low fruity esters. And as it warmed, I got some hints of richer, like toffee-like malt. Then no DMS or diacetyl or anything like that. It's a nice clean ale, and that's a good job with a beer of this strength. So good start for the beer. Appearance wise, you know, it went a little bit downhill here with the, you know, the color is fine, but the head, it poured with almost no head at first, and it dissipated fairly quickly from there. Just, you had a, what I could see of the bubbles, they were mostly fine in a small delicate collar around the glass very shortly after pouring. This sample has got a little bit more. I've allowed it to warm up a bit. It was a little colder at first. The second sample poured a little bit better head. Flavor wise, it's pleasantly rich, maltiness balanced reasonably, you know, with the hops. I think the malt wins. With the rich bready and caramel malt flavors, the rye coming through low alongside that. The bitterness in here is medium low, bordering on low, I would say, too little for style. You want a little more bitterness in that, especially knowing that if it's something you do want to age, it's going to decrease over time. But it's smooth bitterness, and it plays off to their, flavor characteristics well. Medium high alcohol throughout, but it is smooth. Hops, again, resiny, citrusy. Has a malty aftertaste. And obvious clean, strong ale fermentation was employed. Only a touch of any kind of alcohol hotness or alcoholic flavors. Really nice job there. You can tell that it's strong, but I get it more in the mouthfeel, in the down the chest warming, which I'll get to here next. The mouthfeel, medium, full-bodied with fairly low CO2. It can be allowed. Low CO2 can be allowed in this style. And firm warmth down the throat, all the way down into the chest, but pleasant and not too hot or biting. No real creamy character, no astringency. Pretty good job on that. It feels about right for a barley wine. Well-crafted one. Overall impression, it has a great blend of flavors right now. It seems like the hops are slowly going to be buried with sweet malt that's here. And that happens anyway with a barley wine. You know, when you taste a fresh, 0 to 1 year old barley wine, you get a lot of hops in it, but you get to 2, 3, 5 years, it starts to go away pretty dramatically. And especially the hop flavors, you might be left with a little bit of bitterness. And then that starts, slowly fading away as well as the years go on. I've done a lot of barley wine verticals, and it's really fun to taste the differences between the years. But after a while, it's just a more gradual progression. A lot happens in the first few years. So you might want to push that bitterness up a little bit higher, and the hop flavors a little bit as well, as Brian suggested, especially if you want to age it. I would suggest, finding ways to clear up the beer up front, because remember, the haze will increase, over time. In a barley wine, as will the beer will darken as well, due to oxidation, and the flavors will change and kind of meld over time as well. So you want to start out with a bigger balance of hops and clear it up while you can, because it is going to get hazy anyway, and you forgive haze in an aged barley wine. But if it starts here, it might get really hazy by then. Looking at it, like, is this orange juice or dark orange juice? I don't know. But no, good job with the yeast though, for sure. Really well cared for fermentation and good attenuation. I might increase the CO2 just a little bit, or that may increase with age too. Especially if any fermentables going on in there, and you keep it at a kind of room temperature, it's gonna change, and things are going on in there. It's alive, and you might start low there, and that's fine. It's allowed, like I said. So that's just. I think I would prefer this beer with just a little more carbonation as it is now, but in a few years, it might be there and push some of those malty flavors, and the hops will be gone, but it's going to be a different animal in a while. So hopefully we do get, remember to save the second bottle that Brian and I still have and taste it again someday. I landed on a 33 for this. I'm pretty close to Brian. I agree with that. This is in the very good territory. Generally within the parameters, just has some, some minor issues with, I would say, kind of the balance, and just depending on what you want to do with it. If you want to drink it for present use, it's actually pretty good right now. It almost tastes like an aged barley wine would taste, but you can tell it's fresher. There's still some fresh hop aromas here. To me, I definitely got some resiny. I'll be interested to hear the hop choices and what your ingredients were on this and what your process was, especially with the yeast and everything, because that was nicely done for second barley wine. Jeez.
Yeah, they're tough, man. I got a lot of what everyone was saying. For me, I think it almost tastes like under attenuated, because it's already really, really sweet, and I feel like as it's going to age, it's not really going to be helped. It's going to get sweeter, I think.
Yeah, you don't want them to be cloying, for sure.
Yeah, and it tastes sort of so I'm interested to hear your hop choices, because it tastes sort of like new school, quote unquote, juicy IPA hops. It tastes, there's like a fruit juice, like a pineapple orange juice component that I get out of this. That is not necessarily, I mean, I don't know. Is it it's more like American strong ale, I think, or like like an Arrogant Bastard kind of thing. I wouldn't think of this as a barley wine.
I think if there was a little more bitterness there to balance that sweet malt, yes, that we'd be having a different conversation.
Correct.
Because it's gonna change the way that plays.
Yeah,
it might be fairly well attenuated. It doesn't seem like it's under attenuated to me.
Okay. All right. I'm always, I guess, on the erring on the side, not erring, but I'm always going to say, oh, back off on the malt instead of add more hops. It's just, there are two ways to do it. There are two ways to adjust it, for sure.
Right. It's like when you're EQing an instrument in a music mix, sometimes you have to take out the sound that you don't need for that instrument, and that makes all the difference.
Yeah.
Adding more.
Anyway, Derek, what is your recipe on this, man? Let's jump into that.
Well, I just switched over to using Brewer's Friend, and the hop thing, I definitely screwed that up. I used Nugget and Cascade hops. I didn't realize as I was adding them that I went with Brewer's Friend's alpha acids, which were much higher than the actual alpha acids. And I was suggesting 50 IBUs to 100 IBUs for barley wine, and I wanted it to be lower. I wanted it to be more malt forward. So I think that's where I messed that up. For the haze part, it's kind of doing a little bit of the BUI thing and didn't hit my numbers. So I added some, dry malt extract, but I think it was the wheat by accident. So I probably boosted it a little bit with wheat. So that might cause a little bit of haze. I don't know. But the recipe I used, 52% pale ale. I used 34% rye.
Holy smokes.
Wow. 32% rye, you said?
34.
34.
Okay.
I used 1.5% of Caramel 120, almost 6% of Maris Otter, and then I used a pound of brown sugar as well. And then I used WLP 001, the California Ale Yeast.
Okay.
Fermented that at 66 or 67. I think it was, I don't have the numbers on me. I know it definitely attenuated all the way down. It was, I think it was below 10-15. I think it might have been 10-14 or 10-15 is where it finished out.
You must have put a lot of yeast in there. Do a big starter?
I did do a double yeast starter for it. And I think when I actually got it, I think the yeast itself was really fresh. Like it was probably within a month of manufacture. So
that vitality helps because it has a lot of work to do.
Oh yeah, definitely. But once it started going, it didn't stop until, and then I made sure that it sat on there for probably a good week or maybe even a little bit longer with zero activity.
Wow.
Yeah, because you could see some like a butterscotchiness in there if it hadn't reabsorbed all that diacetyl. It was a good job keeping it just nice and cleanly malty to me. But again, I think a little more bitterness would balance it nicely. And the next time you make this, just add a little more hops. I think the hop choices were fine. And they're going to fade anyway if you're aging it. So the story for this beer was you had plans for this beer, right?
Oh, well, the plans behind this beer, what I had hoped to do, I just had a son this year. So my plan was to make some kind of beer that I could have with him, or well, not with him, but I'll have one of these beers on his birthday up until he's 21. And then once he's 21, I'll have one with him. I don't know if the barley wine's going to last that long or how good it's going to be or not. So I'm hoping that, you know, next year or something like that, I could, if you guys don't have it, I'll send out another batch for you guys to try out. But I'm also expecting a second child next year. So I'm planning to make another barley wine. And actually JP would probably be able to give me the help for it. Cause what I'm looking to try and do is try and go chocolate. And I know he likes using pale chocolate for stouts and everything.
Love it.
So I was kind of hoping maybe you had a little insight there. I don't want to put any actual chocolate in. I want to try and go malt forward and focus, whether it's pale chocolate wheat or something.
Yeah, I mean, pale chocolate, I always think that people can use more than they think because it's a dark grain and we're sort of conditioned to like not use too much or whatever. But pale chocolate is sort of a workhorse. You know, what's your batch size again?
I'm just doing 5 gallons.
5 gallon batches. I don't know. Half a pound. 3/4 of a pound. Is that too much, guys? Do you think? I wouldn't go pound.
I wouldn't go too heavy.
Yeah.
No, it's that sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the hard part about like dialing in a recipe that you're going to brew a whole bunch of it and age. It's like you don't have a chance to really go back and do it again. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how it's going to play with everything else. Maybe I would do 3/4 of a pound. That's what I would. That's what I feel is good.
Pale chocolate.
Yes, pale chocolate.
That sounds like a good recommendation to me. I was astounded by the amount of rye in this thing, and you didn't have a stuck mash or anything. You just went for the gusto.
A lot of rice hulls.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good. The rice hulls probably saved you because that thing would have gummed up.
Yeah, that's a lot of rye.
Yeah. Wow. Absolutely.
And it's in the flavor. There is some of that spiciness and a little husky kind of rye quality, but it's not overstated at all. And that surprised me that there's that much in there.
What yeast did you use? Did you say?
He said 001.
California.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
And did you temperature control your fermentation?
I did. I have built a fridge with a controller on it, so I could dial it in.
Yeah, he said 66. That's good.
Yeah, that's perfect. And it really shows because beer like this can either go fermentation too hard, too fast, and it comes out fusily and nasty, or if you control it too low or don't control it, it's in your basement, and your basement's, 55, and it can just go real slow, poop out, and then you end up with a wordy mess that you don't want to drink. But I think fermentation, I think, to me, is very well done.
So I'm picturing this, like, you've got, this is beer one. Now you rebrew it whenever you do this, and age it for almost as long, and you get to taste it on the 21st birthday with the kid. So with each kid, they each get their own beer. You know, the second kid gets the chocolate recipe, right? And then we get that, yep. And we try to help you improve it. We might be just steering you wildly wrong here, but you never know.
True.
But then you taste the beer with the, is the palate going to be sophisticated at age 21 to appreciate a rich barley wine like this? But I'm just picturing this scene as like, so here's the beer I made of my own accord. I just threw together. They scored it pretty well. And then I sent it back to them and hopefully we do better. We don't know, but yeah, I was like, yeah, the Dr. Homebrew helped me perfect my recipe. And the kid will be like, oh my God, Dr. Homebrew, those guys are like freaking legends, you know?
And then by the time you get to your last child, you name him Brian.
You're being, this is a fantasy that we're going to pull the plug on right now. Derek,
the first child is always an experiment. I'm a first child.
So yep,
the first
that's
child
true.
Here should be an experiment too.
Yep. Derek, do you have anything else for these boys?
I mean, just other than adding those hops, just to make that bitterness to kind of balance that out a little bit better is the main suggestion.
That was from me. Yeah, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
And you can clear up the beer with a lot of different methods. You can use gelatin to fine it. There's you kind of do low heat on the gelatin and add that in, just like the Knox packets. We could send you instructions on how to do that. Or, you can use like a biofine kind of thing or, whatever, there's a lot of different ways to clarify that. The haze, even if you get it from accidentally using wheat malt or something, you can still find ways to clear it out of there.
I'm a big fan of gelatin fining, which Dwight in our homebrew club taught us all how to do probably a good 10 plus years ago. But yeah, I agree with Brian. Biofine or gelatin can both give you real good results. They're just different mechanisms, but they both kind of get you to the same place.
With gelatin, you're going to want to increase your hops a slight amount, though.
Yes,
it's going to pull out some of the hop flavor. So if you're starting here, it's going to pull it down even unacceptably far. So just go like 1.2 or something times the normal amount that you want.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just love the mechanism of action of gelatin, which is just to me kind of fun, where you get that stuff heated up to not that hot, maybe 110, 120 degrees. You don't want to denature the gelatin, but you want to get it warm and get it to a point where it's all dissolved. and you slowly pour it on the top. Because it's hot, it kind of floats on the top of your fermenter. And then as it cools off, so it makes like a pancake on top, in a sense. And as it cools off, it just falls down through your fermenter very slowly. And it grabs the stuff floating in your fermenter, and it pushes stuff down. And you end up with like this big kind of somewhat porous thing just slowly falling down in your fermenter and taking all the stuff that's suspended in your beer with it. I don't know. I find that kind of elegant and fun and interesting. I don't know. I'm weird that way.
It is true. Interesting. You do have to be careful racking, of course, and not get little chunks of it back up into the beer. Yeah. But, you know, yeah.
Doing. All right. Was that everything? Derek, did they answer any of your questions? I don't think they did, but too bad.
No, I think that's good. I submitted it to a homebrew competition. I know everybody's taste buds are a little bit different. They said that it was a little maybe phenolic or chewy, but you guys didn't say that. So I'm just saying that's up to, you know, different taste buds. So
yeah, I would do that.
Yeah, I appreciate it. They said that, so, and
cool. I feel like I'm pretty sensitive to, yeah.
We're both sensitive to phenol, Brian.
Yeah.
All right, Derek. Well, we'll let you go, man.
All right, thanks.
We'll wrap things up. All right, everybody.
Thanks, man.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
Yep.
Good night.
Congrats on the kids.
Later, Derek. All right, we're gonna take a fast break. We're gonna wrap things up here on Dr. Homebrew. Hang on, we'll be right back.
The leader in affordable, high-quality kegerators is here. Introducing Komos, the kegerator designed with serious beer drinkers in mind. It features an all-stainless steel draft tower, a major upgrade over traditional chrome-plated brass towers, and Komos keeps your new tower cold with their air-cooled tower fan, wrapping your beer lines in frigid coolness. Your beer is poured from innovative forward-sealing faucets that don't leak, so they stay cleaner for longer. Dual gas inlets on the rear of the fridge allow you to run both CO2 and nitrogen gas. Serve your beer with CO2, serve your kegged wine or even cocktails with nitrogen. The digital temperature display has the largest range available, allowing you to use the Komos kegerator for fermentation if you need to. And now Komos kegerators ship with duo-tight draft fittings for that click-to-connect assembly we've all dreamed of. Buy direct from KomosDraft.com and receive free shipping on your order. That's KomosDraft.com.
Hey, thanks for sticking around, everybody. We are going to be out of here. Mark and Derek, thanks a lot, guys, for sending in beers. If you want to send in beers, and if you want to be on Dr. Homebrew, you email brian@thebrewingnetwork.com. brian@thebrewingnetwork.com. We will get your email. Brian will get you all squared away, get you on the show. You got to send us some beers, of course, because otherwise we don't want to talk to you. If you're not giving us beers to drink, what are we going to do? You're going to tell us about your beer, and then we're going to tell you what you're tasting? No, that's not how it works. We need to try your beers, and that's just the way life is here on Dr. Homebrew. Brian, thank you very much. You know, this has been so much fun. We should just do it again. Why don't we hang out, and we'll do a whole other show in a couple minutes. What do you think? Sounds fun.
Yeah. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, it would. All right, everybody. Thanks a lot. This has been Dr. Homebrew. Really appreciate it. Thank you to our sponsor, Five Star, of course. Thank you to everybody listening. And until next time, we will see you later.